Hi, I'm Ruthie, and I have a recorder.
Stick 'em up.
Listen to Out There on Wednesdays, 4 to 5 p.m. here on Valley Free Radio for interviews and snippets of life from the paths and streets of Northampton. You can hear past editions of Out There archived at weatherbeard.com/out there. And it is Wednesday, May 10th.
Woohoo! All right.
And we have, there are two live guests in the studio. Sometimes I feel like a guest myself when I get confused about what to do. Dwayne Rainey is here. Thanks, Dwayne. Dwayne the dog, Rainey, excuse me. Host of My Generation on Fridays from 2 to 4. Plug that, Dwayne. What's your show?
My Generation. 2 to 4 every Friday. Tune in. The music from the 70s.
And also we have Ruth Tirado here. Mm-hmm.
Tirado,
who's the current president of the board of directors of Casa Latina, right here in this building where the radio station is, 140 Pine Street, right? Mm-hmm.
That's right, the community center.
Ruth also says she's someone who likes to binge on Food Network.
Yes, I do. It's my favorite channel. Forget about TNT and ABC. Food Network's ready to go.
Fox.
Fox, yeah. Forget about Fox. You got like Emerald.
when you told me that at first, I was like, binge on Food Network. I was really confused because I was like, food?
Yeah.
What kind of food is that?
Well, okay. So I love watching videos and tutorials about what to extravagant dishes to cook. So I'm a food lover. It's one of the things that I do.
So isn't Ruthie. She loves food.
The eating part, that is.
The eating part. The cooking part.
She wishes you could just blend it all so it's bypass the chewing.
No, the chewing's what I like.
You told me how long it took you to chew one time, and it takes like a quarter of your day to take and eat all the food that you eat.
It's because I got dull teeth and not many of them meat, okay?
Blunder.
So the focus of this show is going to be talking about Casa Latina and the work that Casa Latina does in Northampton. Mm-hmm. This is also Pledge Week here at Valley Free Radio. And that's why Dwayne's here, to ask you for your money. Stick 'em up.
Stick 'em up is right. Nobody else in the valley provides this perspective. Nobody owns a station. Nobody controls the content. Nobody censors the viewpoints. We're beholden to nobody. So we can tell the truth as we see it.
And if you don't like the truth as the programmers you hear see it, then you can also do your own show and speak your own truth. Shows and all information is online at valleyfreeradio.org, streaming online at valleyfreeradio.org. So I guess maybe we'll just
don't forget to call in.
Oh yeah, right.
403-585-1033. You can call in and make your pledge donation. $5, $500, $5,000.
Mm-hmm. And
let's make it happen.
Yes. You can also do it online at valleyfreeradio.org/donate.
Donate. Hit the donate button and then go in there and just feed in the information.
Yeah. Okay. So. Yeah, just maybe a little bit of check-in. I was a little bit flustered. I was a little bit late coming here today. Later than I would have liked. I was actually doing Pedal People compost pickup in East Hampton because we expanded to East Hampton like beginning of April, compost service only. So we only have a few customers out there, and I managed to rig up my bike with a couple of bucket panniers on each side and strap a tub to the top.
I don't know how you do it. It's really intense.
I sure as heck didn't want to take a trailer all the way out there because like two of the customers are all the way on the other side, like out on College Lane, out towards like the Big Y.
Oh, that's where
Pure Foods out there.
That's where I am.
Really?
Oh, Pure Foods is far. But yeah, I'm right on that lane.
Yeah.
I'm right around there. That's far.
Anyway, so it took me a little longer than I thought it would have. And then I was on the way back. I was coming down the bike path from downtown East Hampton towards where the mill buildings, Eastworks and all that is, and where they have the park, the basketball courts. And I passed this young man who was walking down the path. He had a basketball under one arm and like jeans and boots and a hat. And he had a Confederate flag wrapped around him.
Lovely.
Was it my son?
Well, he said he was only 16.
Oh.
So anyway, And I just caught a glimpse, I think, of, I don't know if it was today's Gazette or yesterday's Gazette, something about the Confederate flag being banned in East Hampton. Do you know, Ruth, what?
I wish it was banned everywhere. That's my own public opinion. But the I know that there's a little bit of strife because there was a student in the local high school, possibly, that wore the Confederate flag. And there was a discussion that the school board had passed it as it wasn't an issue where the student had to be reprimanded. It was more of like a free speech, free attire kind of theme for that student in particular. But I haven't read the Gazette today. So uh-huh. what did you find out?
I didn't read it. I just read the headline. But anyway, so I rode past him and you know, when I first saw it, I was like, wow, it seems like he would be looking for a conflict to wrap yourself in a Confederate flag in East Hampton, considering all the
Was it physically things. Like a flag flag?
Yeah.
Is it?
Oh, wrapped God. Around, yeah.
Okay. Sorry.
No. It's fine. Okay. Anyway.
Were you playing basketball for North Carolina?
Close enough.
so then I had another compost pickup to do, so I got my other compost pickup. But as I was heading out that way, I was like, oh, I want to engage with this person in some way. And then I thought, oh, he had a basketball under his arm. I like playing basketball. So then I went back and he was shooting around. I was like, hey, can I shoot around with you? So
cool.
we shot around for a while and you know, just, you know,
that's a really good approach to, you know, just opening up to someone who you would normally categorize as like off-putting.
Yeah, I mean, he was really generous with his basketball.
Yeah,
and it was like totally low-key. You know, we weren't competitive at all. We were just shooting and talking.
That's right.
And he told me he was in ninth grade at East Hampton High School.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Anyway, so at some point I was like, hey, so I noticed you had the Confederate flag wrapped around you. What is, you know, so I sort of asked him about that. And, we had a pretty good conversation about it, I feel like. And I asked him, I was like, wait, how come you're not in school right now? And he said something I have to write a paper about this. Oh. I'm working on my paper in my head right now something like that.
Yeah, that's a teenager's response. I got it all in there, right? Yeah. Got it on top.
Yeah, his perspective was kind of like, this flag represents that people fighting for what they believed in, and it's not, you know, there's a lot that could be argued. I said, well, you know, ISIS fights for what they believe in, too.
That's right.
But, I mean, mostly I just tried to listen and connect on whatever level we could. But the one thing that it made me think of is that, is there some way to reclaim the Confederate flag like the N-word has been reclaimed?
Goodness.
The sea flag.
there was when I was young, I was younger around the time when I was taking classes at NHS. So I was in Northampton High School, and I met a young lady who, she wore... like a Confederate flag. I can't remember, but she was mixed. She was biracial. She, half black, half white, and she was Muslim as well, but she was from Mississippi, and in her defense, the Confederate flag was mostly her pride of being Southern, right? So there is an attachment towards, the Confederate flag in terms of like Southern pride and Southern culture. And I can respect that. And, but I don't really see a place for it in the North, in the sense that we're Northerners, right? And we fought against the South in the Civil War, and we won, right? We're the United States of America. But at the same time, I think it's also, it's a testimony of history, and there's a lot of pain and a tremendous amount of meaning towards that flag that's very negative. And I just have... moral like issues with seeing that flag being portrayed with white non-person of color population in a majority middle class neighborhood where there's no real people of color to be seen. And so it makes me feel uncomfortable, it makes me feel unwelcome, and And kudos to you, Ruthie, for approaching this young man. And I work with teenagers as well. But it's very difficult to get them to sort of even consider and reevaluate those little nuances of their behaviors and their beliefs. But it takes time. And so kudos to you. I don't know how I would have approached it.
when you see an easy connection like basketball, like, oh, I can go for that one.
That's right.
I hadn't played basketball in a while, and I really wanted to shoot around.
Yeah,
who wouldn't? But then it made me kind of even later Wait. For today and more discombobulated.
Yeah. Just cutting it close.
Dwayne, you got any stories from your day?
Is there any time?
Well, can I talk about my day? Oh, yes, my goodness. Please. Can I talk about the Iron Horse and how awesome it is on Tuesday Latino nights? Every Tuesday night, Iron Horse in Northampton, they have Latino. It's basically like your club Latino night for salseros, how we would call it, like salsa dancers, bachata dancers, anything that's type of like typical Latino music. It's there, right? And like, I had a phenomenal time. It's been a while since I went dancing, and like the whole rhythm and the social experience of it. It doesn't mean that you have to have a partner. It doesn't mean that you have to be attached at the hip with your friends. You can. It was a very easygoing night. What I thought was really fascinating was like people could easily just approach you and ask you, hey, like, do you want to take this dance? And without the question of, ooh, this person is too interested in me, go away. Mm-hmm. You know, nice. It's like Iron Horse for sure. As Casa Latina board president, I would recommend Latino Nights on Tuesdays because it's a different kind of social gathering where everyone is there to have a good time. And there's no ifs, ands, buts about it. It's just here people enjoying a certain type of music and like dancing to synchronized beats. It's super fun. And I'm all thinking about that still last night.
Cool. And the basking in the glow.
Sweat, you know, all that. It's like really you look a hot mess by the end of the night. But you had a great time, you know. It's at the end of the day, it's all worth it. That was my experience from last night.
So that's every Tuesday night?
Every Tuesday night. I mean, I'm sort of just tooting their horn, but yeah. I've been going to Iron Horse for a while because it's one of the rare Latino spaces where people can come together and enjoy our music, right? So, and it doesn't even have to be just Latinos. I see plenty of multicultural individuals there. And so that's what I really enjoy, seeing other people of other social groups enjoying what I grew up with. That's some of the culture and some of the songs that I remember growing up when my mom was cooking dinner, you know? It's reminiscent of what I've experienced. So I love sharing that. But years ago, there used to be this space in Florence. It was named Silk City. And unfortunately, they did close down. They used to have Latino nights on Saturday nights. And I believe the owner sold Silk City to what is Johnny's?
JJ's.
Yeah,
Tavern.
JJ's Tavern. So good for them. You know, congratulations. But now we're out a space. We're out a safe space for fellow Latinos to bask in the glory of what is Latinidad. Mm-hmm. Cool. I'll promote that in any case.
All right.
And we have plenty of music shows like Bally Tango concert on Wednesdays at 11 o'clock. It's already over.
Oh.
And Ritmo Latino on Sunday at 6.
Sundays at 6.
Latin music with a Caribbean beat.
Yes.
Root. Roots. Mm-hmm. Caribbean roots. So...
All right.
You got plenty of music.
Well, all right. I promised you we were going to talk about Casa Latina. I promised Ruth she'd have the opportunity to share about Casa Latina. So, Ruth, can you tell us, like, what is Casa Latina?
Casa Latina. We've been around in the community for over 50 years. We don't really have, like, an established history date. It's like we know that it was in the 1980s or 1990s or so. So we've been around for a hot minute, but mainly we are we're one of the only Latino-led and Latino-focused nonprofit groups that is in Hampshire County. We're based in Florence in the community center, right above Valley Free Radio, which is super fun.
I know. I'm sorry. It's taken me two and a half years to interview someone from Casa Latina.
Exactly, exactly. It's okay. We're particularly small, so we're a little strapped in terms of hands. But that's where I come in, right? So I was recently recruited as a board member, just an average person who's coming in with a Latino experience, and I was invited to participate on the board and sort of exchange ideas of how we see Casa Latina going in the future, how we should envision it. And then with the success of the Caminata of last spring, I coordinated a community march to bring up a boost Casa Latina's popularity a little bit, because not everybody knows Casa Latina. And then I became the board president. But Casa Latina is basically your nonprofit. It's a service-based nonprofit that provides informational referrals to local residents who need access to how to get food stamps or affordable housing, where to find affordable apartments in general. If you're a local resident and you have questions about the area, you can call Casa Latina. You can call the executive director, Lillian Torres, who's the executive director, and she will answer all types of questions for anyone who does call in. And then we have medical interpreting services, where we'll have interpreters in the background waiting to provide services for patients in the local... I think it's a Valley, is it Valley Medical Group that's in Florence?
Yes.
Yeah. So Valley Medical Group, another number of clinics, Cooley Dickinson as well. And we just provide bilingual services for those patients who do not know any type of English. But which is interesting, because we also have Chinese interpreters and we have Khmer interpreters as well. So it's not just Latinos.
Come out of Casa Latina.
Out of Casa Latina. Super fun. We're the only agency that has Khmer. I think it's a Cambodian language.
Khmer Rouge.
Yes. So we're one of the only agencies that have those interpreters. And it's excellent. And we do provide case management services for those who have issues within the community that they need to be followed up on. Lillian is great at doing that. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Do you remember how you first found out about Casa Latina?
I remember Casa Latina from when I was growing up in Florence. I moved here in 2002. I was 12 years old, and my mom, at the time, she was looking for a job. And we discovered Casa Latina through, you know, the grapevine, social talking and such. And my mom found Casa Latina as this resource. She ended up working as a volunteer. But through transitional assistance services, she was able to earn some funds and support ourselves at the same time. So we worked for a little while. I remember going to a luncheon and visiting the ambiance of Casa Latina, and it was super fun to see like familiar faces and familiar foods. I remember really good food that day. But see, food. Get me started on food and I'll start talking about it.
That's good. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And afterwards, their time passed. My mom ended up moving on to getting a job within her field. She's a certified nursing assistant. So I think she worked locally at the Northampton nursing home at the time. Mm-hmm. And as time passed, I ended up graduating from high school. I was well over 18, and I wanted to volunteer some of my services back to Casa Latina. And I ended up participating in some, like, door-to-door outreach, community outreach, letting people know of the services that we provide and any possible doing some minor questionnaires about what kind of programs or services that residents would like to see in the future from Casa Latina. And that was for a summer. It lasted a summer, and then I went on to HEC. So, but when you grow up, you always remember your roots, right? So I've never really lost that attachment to Casa Latina.
You mentioned an event from last year, the Caminata, or what?
I did,
what
yes.
What is that?
La Caminata, so literally translated, it is Community March. So La Caminata de Casa Latina, there have been different caminatas. Our first was I can't remember the date, probably around 2005 or something. it was around the time of the AIDS March, like AIDS Awareness March. And we had coordinated a caminata with community residents, and we marched from the Northampton Gazette building towards City Hall. And it was really all the purpose of like raising awareness of AIDS and the AIDS campaign. That's awesome, HIV. I loved it. I didn't participate in that one, but this year's caminata, we coordinated with La Vera Cusana, and we wanted to just prioritize this mission for raising awareness of caminata, of Casa Latina services, of our really 50 years, or 50, like 5 decades of working with residents. And it's taken quite a while to organize the event, but I think it went really well because our Valley Gives Day preceded itself. We earned a little bit more than what we expected, and it was really a big success. So I was happy about that.
Cool. Mm-hmm. When you're talking about Casa Latina programs and food.
Yes.
Then, of course, I think about how we connected last week at the Northampton Food Rescue.
That's right.
So do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely.
New project that Casa Latina is involved in?
Yes. Mm. Okay. So new projects. Casa Latina was recently approached by a group of Smith College students from the, I think it's the Center for Environment Department at Smith College, but they came with us with a proposal to start a food rescue program. And the big idea was how to eliminate food waste in the community from, you know, it's such a big deal when we have major supermarkets that are throwing away perfectly good foods and produce. And so, like, how do we eliminate that kind of waste to be a little bit more sustainable, a little bit environmental friendly? And the Smith College students, they realized that they would need to obviously rescue the food from local supermarkets, but preferably they wanted to give it to a community that was in need. Their first stop was Northampton Food Survival Center, which is awesome. But I believe the hours that the students were proposing didn't work with the hours that the Northampton Survival Center couldn't work with. So they proposed Saturdays. Northampton Food Survival Center, they only have hours from Monday through Friday. So those weekend hours put a little jam into their big plan. So, but they found us. They approached us in, I believe, March. Mm-hmm. And we were elated. I think by just all they had to do was describe to us the mission of rescuing food from local produce and distributing it to residents. I was sold at that. But it's been growing a little bit. So far it's a pilot program, and we've arranged that the Smith, our pedal person,
which was me last Saturday.
That's right. It was Ruthie last Saturday.
And Lily too. Lily and I did the run together.
Yes. She's the, she was one of the leading, drafters of this proposal. Wasn't it? Lily.
Yeah. She's a Smith student. Three Smith students that mm-hmm. have done, this as their senior project.
Lily, Allie, and Misha, I think they're fantastic students, and they're graduating this year. So I'm super sad to see them go, but, kudos to them for graduating and making that big step.
Yeah.
So you rescued the food on Saturday, and we had leeks, which was awesome. You're trying to convince people to take in leeks.
Yeah, when you were talking about traditional food, I was like, what's crate leeks? Of leeks that we got on Saturday, those or were they not? How did those fit in?
Make some vichyssoise.
That's right. So the idea of food rescue, we rescued the food and we wanted to distribute it to a community that needed it. In particular, we decided Hampshire Heights. I think it wouldn't, our perspective of this pilot program is not just isolating it to residents of Hampshire Heights, but rather just to the major community at large. If you know that there is the Northampton Survival Center that you pick up frequently, some food staples to get you through the month. There's also some weekend items that you can get through us at Hampshire Heights. So feel free to and feel welcome to come in and see what we have on Saturdays at 4, between 4 and 6. We'll be there and bring your little plastic bag or reusable bag, and we'll distribute that.
So is it going to be just like a particular spot that...
It is a particular spot. It's right behind, I think there's, it's building 19C. There's a community room in the Hampshire Heights grounds, and the building that they designate for community events and birthday parties and such, it's building 19C, and it's right in front of the mailboxes. It's where you would pull out to get into, how would you say?
Like by the Goodwill?
That little exit or entrance, whatever you would consider it.
The Bridge Road.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the side that that building is on, because there's two areas, right, of Hampshire Heights. But overall, I found that it was funny when we had proposed this date and we were sending out the word in the community, not a lot of people recognize the community room. So I took it upon myself to, you probably saw me, Ruthie's. I was walking door to door like, hey, you remember me? I talked to you Thursday. I have these leaks. Do you want leaks? Mm-hmm. So, although
you got chased.
I had to chase down some people, and I like
you got chased out.
Oh no, no, no! I didn't get chased out. I chased down people, in order to get rid of those leaks.
You'll take this leak, whether you like it or not.
That's how I had to do it.
Well, I took a few home, and they were very good.
Once they were really good.
Something had happened to them where they were full of rocks. But once I got the rocks out, they were really good.
They were full of rocks.
I mean, just like in a way where
extra crunch.
They had, but no, they were really good. They were like fresh and delicious and bright green.
Yeah. I mean, I figured when I got the leeks, it reminded me a lot of it. Okay, so. To describe you folks, to describe a little bit of what the leeks look like, they look like very large spring onions, right? They look like large, thick spring onions.
Scallions.
There you go.
Huge, thick like scallions on steroids. Yeah. Or garlic
on steroids.
Exactly. And so not a lot of people know how to work with those. But what I noticed from when you brought them in, the leeks looked... You know, they didn't look so damaged per se, but they didn't look polished as you would see it on the
Food Network.
Yeah, on the Food Network. You
so
know,
she went home and just like scaped it and found out how to cook them.
easily, I can totally do that. I'm ready at the palm of my hands. I got a smartphone. I can do it anytime. But so the visual of the foods probably didn't look as appetizing as what you would assume to be when you walk through glistening red apples and Big Y. But because they had these foods saved back in storage, right? So this, the appearance of these leeks reminded me a lot of the farmers markets in Ecuador. I'm Ecuadorian. I am from Ecuador. I go to... farmers markets pretty frequently when I'm visiting, and a lot of their produce is as is. It's what you see, it's what you get. And I thought it was like a beautiful experience to remember what that was like, seeing raw foods just as they came. It might need a little bit of like cleaning, a little bit more dense rinsing, but it's definitely like fresh produce that it comes from the heart, I guess, in some ways. So
that's actually not a bad idea, to be able to check on your iPhone or smartphone when the food comes in, like Saturday afternoon at 4:30, and be like, okay, what are some recipes that can go with these two boxes of things, or these boxes, and distribute this?
That was an idea that I had. Mm-hmm. I definitely have an idea. Possibly like doing little snippets of how can I say, recipes, and posting them on the table so that people can see, oh, like turnips, you can actually make something out of a turnip. Mm-hmm. I actually don't know how to make turnips, but looking up recipes so that it's a little bit more accessible for residents to understand and like not be too afraid of this new vegetable. I think that is super important when it comes to like food sustainability and food rescues, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. In terms of the quality of food that might come in, like the first week we pick stuff up. Yes, this past Saturday was actually the second week we picked stuff up, but the first week we dropped it off for you all.
Yeah.
But 2 weeks ago when we picked up one, we got a couple boxes, and one of the boxes was this pre-cut washed salad.
Oh.
Prepackaged salad.
Oh, very nice.
But the reason that they gave it to us, they said, They couldn't sell it because it had no expiration date stamped on it.
You're kidding.
But it was like totally fresh.
No, they were about to throw it away because there was no official stamp.
Yeah.
And that was
Isn't that crazy?
Well, that puts a lot of things into perspective because, you know, how many other dozens, hundreds of supermarkets that easily can throw away packaged goods just because of this.
They do. And now they're putting lots
of thousands of pounds of food.
They're the United States gets rid of like 40% of their food.
Yeah, 40% of the food grown here gets thrown away.
It gets thrown into the garbage. And like Stop and Shop, I hate to say the name, but they put locks on their dumpsters, so they just take and make sure that they're brought to like pig farms and stuff like that. People can't
actually
like dumpster dive anymore.
I'm going to interview Lily from the Food Rescue Smith College student for like maybe for next week, sometime soon. And because Lily was telling me like it's part of their environmental group, or I forget what that program is. That program at
Center
Smith,
for New
Center
Environment.
For the Environment or something.
Yeah,
they did a tour of Stop and Shop and learned that well I'm trying to figure out what to say on the air and what not to. But well, Lily can give more information, but the reason Lily said that those dumpsters have locks on them, like they changed their system from how it used to be. And used to, they had Triple T haul it up to Martin's farm in Greenfield, the compost. But then now they do, Stop and Shop does it all internally within the Stop and Shop network. And so they're hauling their own compost to a giant digester run by Stop and Shop somewhere else in the state.
And we just want to lighten the load, though.
Exactly, exactly. But yeah, why does it have to be locked? I don't know.
I hear them. Produce recycling is now open.
Produce recycling.
You're throwing it out. It's not even on back there on a discount shelf anymore.
See, that's a shame.
So if you just tuned in, you're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. The guest in the studio is Ruth Tirado from Casa Latina, board president of Casa Latina. Also, Dwayne Rainey is here.
The Dove, my generation, every Friday from 2 to 4. And
I'm Ruthie Woodring.
I'd like to thank Johanna Halvorsen. She just made a donation.
Oh, Johanna, thank you,
Johanna.
She said
to say
her
name. And so thank you very much.
Johanna, I love it.
And thank you to all the people who are donating online.
I'm going to play a little song. This is one of Ruth's requests. I asked her if she had any songs she liked.
I have so many.
I know, so many. Well, we'll start with Manu Chao.
Solo voy con mi pena, sola va mi condena. Correré mi destino para burlar la ley. Perdido en el corazón de la grande Babilón, me dicen el clandestino por no llevar papel. Pa una ciudad del norte yo me fui a trabajar, mi vida la dejé entre Ceuta y Gibraltar. Soy una raya en el mar, fantasma en la ciudad, mi vida va prohibida, dice la autoridad. Solo voy con mi pena, sola va mi condena. Correré mi destino por no llevar papel. Perdido en el corazón de la grande Babilón, me dicen el clandestino, yo soy el quiebra ley. Mano negra clandestina, peruano clandestino, africano clandestino, marihuana ilegal. Solo voy con mi pena, sola va mi condena. Correré mi destino para burlar la ley. Perdido en el corazón de la grande Babilón, me dicen el clandestino. argentino por no llevar papel. Argelino clandestino, nigeriano clandestino, boliviano clandestino, mano negra ilegal. Legende que não me diga, mas disse que não me tem tudo só. Chupa de cima de mundo, na guerra, caravão, mudou a China, se mexeu, mora em Itália. O geral, mas cheguei de entrada, até o ar de mim, vai. Para sua yo, o monia la wana mama, quem irá o. Para su ayo, o monia la wana mama que mira bo.
Ruth, that was one of your the songs that you introduced me to. Can you say something about that one?
Oh, so Mano Chao's Clandestino is really, it goes back to my college days where I was taking a Latinidad class all about Latino experience in the United States. And so one of the songs that came up in conversation was Mano Chao's Clandestino, which means clandestine. And it's this experience of a feeling unwanted, this clandestine presence, right, in a state or a community that is sort of on the watch to get you if you're ever discovered. And I really, that speaks home to me because of much of the experiences that the immigrants and refugees have to deal with here is more of like, I come to this country, I want to make a living for myself, but at the same time, I have to hide myself for fear of being outed. So that speaks a lot to the Latino experience in my own background. And then for Ibai, I love their sound. I picked them particularly because they're an Afro-Cuban duo. They're sisters, they're twin sisters. And they really are proud of their Cuban culture. And one of the songs that we played today, it talks about, it's actually a chant in Santeria religion, sort of a branch off of Catholicism. And so Santeria, it's you have your gods, and one of the main gods is Elegua. He is sort of your yin and yang. He's your bad side and your good side all at one. And so it's a call to Elegua to bless your path and bless your ways in many different ways, of course. But it's really an om to him. And it was a beautiful experience to listen to that on a Valley Free Nonprofit radio. I remember driving one day and it was dark and I was changing the radio and there was nothing on. And then I hear their vocals and I fell in love and I had to research their name. So I found them. And that's the same song that I wanted to share with everybody else.
Oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. One of the things I was wondering with Casa Latina, what are some of the most common countries or colonies in the case of Puerto Rico, I'm mm-hmm. not sure how to mm-hmm. say that, that people who are connected with Casa Latina come from in Northampton?
So Casa Latina, we serve Northampton, we serve also Amherst communities. So it's just the major Hampshire Valley Pioneer Valley, Hampshire County. But the communities here, mainly, it's Mexican, Ecuadorian, but there's also El Salvadorian. There's also a lot of Nicaraguans. It's a lot of diversity in many different ways. So in Northampton, we also have a high population of Puerto Ricans, which is really great. That's our founders in the 80s were Puerto Rican. So
70s.
In the 70s, 70s, 80s. Let's try to get that there.
I remember.
You remember?
Yes, I do.
Oh, do tell. Some history here.
Well, because we had the factories, and I think it was, 1970, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
One of the first Puerto Rican families moved in, and they had built a home as the houses up here off Ryan Road.
Mm-hmm.
And, So I remember when they came in and they come into our schools and stuff. And I mean, they're still friends of mine today.
That's right.
And I also remember, like I said this on another show, when the first like black family took and moved in and mm-hmm. their children going into, coming into our school system.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like in 1977.
That was
like really late.
Mm-hmm.
But, cause we had the factories up here. They started coming here from like out of Holyoke and stuff. And
Exactly. Part of that is when you get some of those new migrants, let's say, like those new residents that come into unknown communities, they're unfamiliar. That's really the start of our name, Casa, right? Casa Latina. It's we looking for a space of in communion with our own culture and our own roots. So Casa is really home in English, literally translated, it's house. So I like to envision Casa Latina as a safe space for those who are seeking refuge in terms of all different experiences, but mainly to be themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's rare that as great Pioneer Valley has is in general in terms of foods and restaurants and shops and stuff, it's really rare to see your own kind of people when you're a minority group. So as Casa, we provide that in that sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a white culture, white dominated area.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit.
I have a joke that's not a joke. I'm not going to say on the air, but it's just, yeah.
What you said about the first black families moving in, Dwayne, is kind of funny because there were plenty of black people here in the 1800s.
I know. Then there was none. And yeah, because we got Sojourner Truth. This is the end of the Freedom Trail.
That's right.
We had a historian on her show a year ago.
Oh, yes, Steve Strymer talked. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So when I was at Smith College at the Campus Center a couple of weeks ago, Ruth, I saw a flyer that said, that talked about a presentation that Casa Latina was doing called Racism and Discrimination in Northampton.
That's right.
Something that probably, I think,
caught
a lot of white people might not see.
Yeah.
Do you know, like, what are some of the things that were talked about or ways that white people need to be more educated about that?
All right. There you go. there's a plane out in the day. So veering back a little bit, when we were talking about those safe spaces, I don't want to make the assumption that they're like our community is so small that we can barely be seen in this, you know, white middle class ambiance, this ecosystem, right? That we live off of each other, and it's made predominantly like capitalist, and it's great. I think like Northampton is a phenomenally great community. I've lived in other parts of Western Mass, and so I have deep affection to Northampton in general, but the racial discrimination portion, it's a very sensitive topic because, of course, it's racial discrimination. It's very sensitive in general, but when we're talking about that as Latinos, a part of the community that's been living here mainly, is we don't necessarily feel welcome in certain spaces that you would normally every day figure, oh, this place is cool, it's hip, like I can sip my coffee without ever wondering like who's next to me and who's wondering about my citizenship, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we have a community, we have really tight-knit community of Ecuadorians, and they're phenomenal people, But I've noticed that in conversations as well, I've talked and interacted with them. It's rare that I've seen them really frequent downtown as much as I do, as much as I did when I was younger. And there's a reason for that. There's a reason because it's not really their place to chill. It's not really their place to experience because it's predominantly white. And it's predominantly more of an elite class. They're working class. They're hard workers. They're going to school and making their own ends meet. But they do not identify with that kind of social interaction, really. So they stay to themselves, and understandable. Mm-hmm. Now, on the times where they do, there was an experience where I have a good friend who used to work at one of the major hotels in the area. And she knew a lot of the housekeepers were mainly of Ecuadorian descent or El Salvadorian or Central American. And these housekeepers, they were great. They were a great team, and she befriended a couple of them. And later on, my friend, she moved on to another job, and fantastic for her, and she remained in connection with those housekeepers. And recently she invited them to dinner at, where was it? Paul and Elizabeth's, I believe. And they had a great dinner, yada, yada, yada. But one of the insecurities that came out from this woman she had invited for dinner was that, oh, they're looking at me. These people are looking at me. Oh, here we go again. You know, but where did that come from? And it was because that the question of if there's too many of us in a white setting, then we feel like, how can it, the dominant group is somewhat threatened of this minority group. And so we begin to look and browse and just not stare necessarily, but there's this insecurity, right? And so, therefore, the minority group begins to feel, oh, here we go again. Here's the target and the scapegoat. And so there's a little bit of tension in race relations. Like, can I, as a person of color, come into your space and feel free to express myself however which I believe, and not feel like I should be looking over my shoulder and sort of judged at whatever behavior that I exhibit. I think that is a real critical portion to how our Latino community, some of our Latino community feels in Northampton in particular. And so, I visited the workshop at Smith College, and I thought it was really great because according to Professor Michelle Geoffroy, she's a Latino studies professor and Spanish professor in Smith College. According to her, this was the first experience that the students had ever came across with in interacting with a nonprofit within the area and hearing testimonials of the women that we had brought in of their own experiences feeling discriminated against. And so I thought it was really interesting to me that these students who, they're part of the community, they're Smith College is right in the heart of Northampton, but they have never really interacted with the actual residents and heard such stories that what they would probably hear frequently on like Facebook, on social media, some injustice, post it, make it viral. It's happening here in the city. And it's not as profuse as some, you know, locations, I would say, but we can't turn a blind eye. And so that's what brought us to talk about racism and discrimination in the Valley. I think so far Casa Latina, we're envisioning a future to grow apart from that in terms of like just making it, how can I say, building our efforts for community outreach and building our relationships with the residents in the area to make sure that they're not feeling insecure about themselves and where they live and where they frequent. I sort of envision a time where like we can all have like potlucks every few days. Still thinking about food.
food is good.
Yes, food is great. I think it's too much for me, though. and so, like, I just feel that when once we start building community and building up our voices, then that insecurity can, like, little by little can become just become history, right? Because once you start to build ourselves into a social force, much like what Pioneer Valley Workers Center is doing, they're doing phenomenal work. Then once we start building capacity in a social force, then I think we are going to be okay. And we're going to be able to spark change within the community and create our own leaders. And that's what I hope for with the future of Casa Latina.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really appreciate that you're there, you exist. We actually have in our PSA log ongoing thing about Casa Latina is looking for board of directors if you're energetic and want to be part of it.
Absolutely.
Do you want to say anything more about that?
Oh, please. We are looking for board of directors. We are looking for new blood. You know, 50 years does go by.
I'm glad you said
50
new.
Years.
We're looking for blood.
We're looking for new blood. in not the zombie apocalypse kind of way. Just please, new ideas, fresh energy. The board of directors, we're currently at a number of 10 or 11. But, you know, things happen. We have one of our longstanding members. He's leaving because of you know, like, work. He's getting a really great job opportunity, and so he has to move on. And I think one of my other colleagues, she's preparing to get a new house, so, like, so every once in a while there's some life obstacles that happen, and so, like, our board is stable at a 10, but it can turn into a 5. So, but in any case, please, audience, whoever's listening, feel free to contact us if you're interested in volunteering some time and energy into a local nonprofit that, you know, works, that is led by Latinos, that it works for the Latino. And really it's all about community building and building relationships. So, and at any time, at any rate, I have gotten to know a new board member, and she's the epitome of new energy. Like, I go and work out with her in the mornings, and it's wild.
Lay off the caffeine.
Yeah.
No, that's
she's not allowed to have caffeine. She can't. I don't let her. But in any case, we're fun. We understand everybody has their own lifestyle. They have their own commitments. But at the same time, this is like a new founding realization that the time has come to make change and to unite forces and build collaborations. So feel free to join me and collaborate on a board, please.
Great.
And that's Ruth Tirado from Casa Latina, president of the board of directors. Thank you so much for coming in today, Ruth. I feel like there's lots more we could talk about. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio, WXOJ LP 103.3 FM in Northampton. And as usual on Saturday, the Bike Lab.
Let's not forget, this Saturday is supposed to be wet.
But we can go do it inside.
It looks so good, why did you throw it away?
You want to learn to fix your bike? How to keep it tuned up so it's there for you when you need it? Or maybe you know already, but you just need to borrow a bike-specific tool that you don't have. Well, come to the Bike Lab.
Almost every Saturday since 2004, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., here in Northampton at 12 Northern Avenue.
Come with your bike or your questions.
And your willing attitude.
Spare parts scavenger hunt every weekend.
Venga para el Bike Lab de Northampton y se divertirá mucho, le enseñará muchas lecciones como arreglar bicicletas.
All repairs guaranteed to the end of the driveway.
Details are online at pedalpeople.coop. That's the Saturday Bike Lab at 12 Northern Avenue.
11 a.m. to 2 p.m.
They say freedom isn't free, but at the Bike Lab it is.
Ya súbase a la bici, compa. Trépese a la de montaña, la bici urbana, la bici cross. Lléguele a la bicicleta. Ya de menos a la eléctrica o a la estática, ya no hay tos. Llegaré pedaleando en el viaje de allá para acá.